reach me there, or hit info@enlaceintl.org. The number one more time is 503-295-6466. Trans and gender nonconforming folks of color and black folks are strongly encouraged to apply for any and all programming that I've mentioned
tonight. Well, brothers and sisters, that kind of wraps it up for us tonight. Again, thank you for listening, and stay tuned for next month. We're looking forward to having you tune in, and holla.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
KABU is building a city of media makers. For 50 years, KABU has had an open-door policy and trained anyone who is interested to create radio and media. We believe in mutual aid, a reciprocal change of resources and services for the benefit of all. What a stale place Portland could be if we lose our diversity of voices and our creative climate that emphasizes fun, truth, beauty, joy, peace, love, and justice. We know that with our expertise and your support, we can keep this city creative, activated, and aware through radio we make together. Invest in the future of media makers and join us on Kickstarter today. Go to kboo.fm/Kickstarter, and thank you for your support of KABU.
Y'all to take a mental note of the up-and-coming show Calculated Conversations, hosted by my brother David Jefferson and myself, Ken Jones, where we get deep into the shared consciousness of popular culture and discuss our understanding of that very thing. Every Tuesday from 7 to 8 p.m. on KABU, the community's radio station. Get ready for the stimulation.
The time is 6:31 p.m. You are listening to KBOO Portland. Please do check out the KABU Kickstarter campaign, kboo.fm/Kickstarter. It is time now for Prison Pipeline.
Prison Pipeline presents a unique perspective of the criminal justice system, addressing the root causes of crime and broadening understanding of the institution of incarceration.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel? When everything goes wrong, you see some bad. But I'm just a soul whose intentions are good. Oh Lord, please don't let me be misunderstood.
Welcome to Prison Pipeline on KBOO Portland. I'm Karen James. On this episode, Prison Pipeline's newest host, Nicole Lindahl, interviews her friend and local activist, Melissa Salazar. Melissa discusses her experience supporting her brother during his incarceration, his experience of prison life, and how they both developed their political consciousness around mass incarceration. We'll hear from Melissa's brother, Marcus Salazar, who phones from a Texas prison where he is currently serving a 5-to-10-year sentence. Prison Pipeline host Nicole Lindahl discusses prison issues on her podcast, Prison Breakdown, which explores the perspectives of people who have direct experience with the criminal justice system. Nicole's podcast can be heard at kboo.fm/prisonbreakdown.
I'm here in the studio with Melissa Salazar. Thank you so much for being here. And maybe we could talk a little bit about how we met.
Well, I was given your information through somebody that I previously was working with, and I read the description of your class and decided that I wanted to participate in it for many reasons. Obviously, incarceration has impacted me personally, and it's something that I do talk about because I'm not ashamed of it, and the fact that like it is my brother who's incarcerated. Also, I've been in different situations where I've gone to these readings or talks, conferences about prison, and have realized that there's very few people who attend these who have had that experience, or, you know, supporting someone incarcerated. And so I know that like when I go into these type of settings that I'm preparing myself to possibly be the only person there willing to openly talk about it.
Yeah. And do you feel that that's kind of a responsibility that you have then? And do you experience it as a burden?
I would say it's a little bit of both. Definitely a burden because I do see where people want to help. You can go in and you can volunteer, but until you have to go through the stages of knowing like, okay, here's my brother. He's sitting in a county jail. We know he's about to get shipped out, or as they say, catch his chains, because he's been sentenced. And then I get the phone call from a family member, well, from my other little brother, saying he's caught his chains, he's gone. And then now you wait because you don't know where he's going. You have no idea when he's gonna be able to contact you. Mother's Day, my mom and my aunt go to see him and he's not there. Hmm. When I went to see him last year during Christmas time, there was a lady who had came all the way from Georgia to see her son. She gets there and I'm standing behind this woman as they're like, well, he's not here. And she's like, but I called and y'all told me he was here. They're like, no, he's not here. So they search their system and tell her, okay, he's at this unit. Well, this is a woman who's from out of state. And I remember just saying like, I'm gonna be able to see my brother. I know he's there. So I took the time to get out of line and talk to that lady and tell her this is the best way to get there. And we're standing in this parking lot of a prison with, you know, her phone pulled up and I'm showing her like, this is where you go. So it's a lot of the small things that people don't take into account and the way it plays on your mind.
Yeah. And so tell us a little bit. So you're from Texas.
Yes.
Yeah. So do you want to tell us a little bit about your background and how your life has been impacted by mass incarceration?
Yeah. So I grew up in a town in Southeast Texas. And when I was there, I never thought about mass incarceration. Like the term mass incarceration was something I never heard of. And it was because it was normal.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody I know has had some type of run-in with the law or has been incarcerated. So I never thought twice about it. When I left Texas and moved here to Portland, as I'm in college, my brother gets in trouble for his second drug offense. I mean, you can pull up his record and it's no more than two charges on there. But then going through that process and reading the new Jim Crow at the same time and seeing it play out that same way, I think I was the only one who wasn't surprised when they hit my brother with 8 years. And it was the weirdest thing to see that his charges carry between 5 to 99 years. Like, what is that? Of course he's gonna sign for 8 years.
Right.
And then because it's his second drug offense, he has to do a mandatory minimum of 5 years. So he's not even gonna see parole until the summer of 2019.
Mm-hmm.
He just celebrated his 26th birthday on September 26th in there. And that's where he's growing up at because of the mistakes he made when he was 18 years old.
I know from some of our previous conversations that you also have a couple of cousins that are serving really long sentences, mm-hmm. also for non-serious, non-violent crimes. Do you want to tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah. There is this thing like where you have to come to the realization of who they are and how this happened. And when I was in Texas, I was very much black and white. I was that, no, if you're in prison or if you're in jail, you're there because you belong there.
Mm.
And that's what happens. You're a bad person. Rehabilitation was never something that was on my mind, as it's black and white there. Those are the consequences to your actions. So when I think about my cousins who are serving this time, and I realize like they were just as young as my brother. And because there was not like focus on that rehabilitation, and it was just consequence, 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 they had that mentality. That mentality started building up in them, and that's who they are. You know, I won't say his name, but sure. The cousin that I have talked about, 99 years for theft because of his previous convictions. That's what he got. And he got in trouble young with drugs. I mean, now when you look at it, and well, when I look at the whole situation, I see he also had a drug problem, and we just washed him off to the side. I am very open in admitting where I failed, and that was I failed in not being there for the support, you know, and then we don't talk about it.
Yeah.
Because it's shameful.
Right.
And I think that that's what hinders my community the most. Mm. Is that shame and stigma, because then you don't look further into it. When I really started looking into it and looking at, you know, the whole history of all of it, I was blown away. I mean, I was actually so frustrated to the point that I almost shut down in college, because I'm looking at the same things happening in this college setting, you know, and these kids who don't look your typical, you know, type of people who would mess around with certain things and stuff like that, but it's everywhere.
Right. You're talking about drug use specifically, yeah. Right? Yeah. Oh, yeah. College campuses are like bastions of drug use, right?
Yeah. And I'm just, I was floored, because yeah. Here I am and I'm like, wow, my whole world is changing around me. And it was really hard because in my family couldn't understand it. Some of my friends couldn't understand it. The things that used to be funny to us and that we would joke around about, I was the one sitting at the table quiet.
Mm.
And it's like, well, what's wrong with you? And I can't laugh at that anymore.
Mm. All right, here comes a call from Melissa's brother.
Hello, this is a free call from
Marcus Salazar.
An offender at Clemens Unit. This call is being recorded and is subject to monitoring. To accept this free call, press 1. To refuse this free call, press 2. To learn how to quit, thank you for using CenturyLink. You may start the conversation now.
Hello?
Hey, sis.
Hey, little brother. We were just talking here, so... I was just telling Nicole about the realization I had and how I began to shut down, and the family and friends couldn't understand where I was coming from and how certain things were no longer funny anymore, and I just couldn't, you know, be a part of it.
Yeah. So, hi, Marcus.
Hello, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. Thank you so much for calling in. We really appreciate it.
Thank you.
So Melissa was kind of talking about how really there's a lot of shame and stigma around being incarcerated or having family members that are incarcerated that kind of can prevent people from looking more deeply into the history.
Yeah, we talk about this all the time, and I love talking about it now because the world needs to know about this system and the effects it does have on family members. Going through it firsthand, you know, my eyes really are open now to what I'm going through. And it don't just take a toll on a person going to prison. It takes a toll on the whole family. You know, my sister's sending me books and sharing the knowledge that she's gained about this prison system with me. It's tough, man. You know, people are really, how do I say this? I mean, I don't know if ignorant would be the right word, but they don't know about the prison system.
Yeah.
You know, kids, growing up, you know, I see a lot of people, friends, dads in prison, cousins, uncles in prison, and they just think, oh, you know, it was his fault, and then he comes home and he messes up again, and they're like, oh, well, he just messed up again. But it's tough. It's tough. Being a convicted felon, the way the system is designed, I see that there's so many restraints on the felon. When you get out, you can't get a good job. Before I came to prison, I was already a convicted felon for probation, a felony possession of a controlled substance. And I couldn't get an apartment in a good neighborhood. And, you know, whenever you think, oh, I'm just a felon, there's nothing good for me. People resort to the old way they used to live. And low-income neighborhoods, trying to get fast money because the jobs they have don't pay too good, and See, like we talked about it, sis, I was a pawn in a game that I knew nothing about.
Mm. Yeah.
And if people don't see themselves like that, like when they come, oh, I'm just a felon. Because, no, you can learn this game, too. You can learn the rules, the way it's designed. You don't have to live the way you used to live. And it's not easy. It's not easy at all. But, you know, you got to want to change, and you got to do something with your time and use your mind. Like I appreciate you sending me these books, because if it wasn't for the books and me wanting to change the way I used to live, there's no doubt in my mind I could just be another, I'm just a felon, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, so one of the things that I'm really hearing you say is, like, you have to swim upstream to get out of the cycle of incarceration and, you know, maybe selling dope or whatever it is, right? Like, that, like, you can't, yeah. Like, if you just go with the flow is just going back and forth into prison your whole life.
Exactly.
But,
exactly.
Yeah, and then it also sounds like one of the really powerful things about learning about the history and the way that the system is structured is that it can kind of motivate you to swim upstream.
Yeah.
There is a game that's going on, and when you're not aware of the game, then you're not going to try to play it. But once you're aware that there's a game, then you can learn the rules just like anything else.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love that.
And that's just one thing me and Melissa have talked about. And not only is she my sister, but she's a great mentor to me.
Mm.
And she helps me see all these things. And I like what you said about you got to swim upstream, because if you just go with the current downstream, you're just going to lead back to that big old body of water where everybody's just saying, I'm a felon.
Yeah.
See, a book that I read, the system that this government designed, they designed the way if we can control the way these people think, we don't have to worry about how they act.
Mm.
If we label them a felon, oh, I'm just a felon, we know how they're going to act. They'll stay right here in their place, and we don't got to worry about it. As I go through this, I look around, I'm like, dang. And it really, like I was talking to my sister, it really hits me hard, because all the units I've been on, majority of the inmates are blacks, African-Americans, and Hispanics.
Yep.
And the blacks and the Hispanics, these classes I'm in, all they say is, oh, I'm just, when I get back, I'm going back to the hood and do. And, like, they don't take the time. And I tell my sister all the time, like, it really hurts me, because I was that person before. I was that person. And when I'm in class, I share with them all the stuff that I learned. And the reaction I get from them is like, oh, okay, dang, man, appreciate you sharing that. And they write it down. You can't just listen to it. You gotta really apply it to your life, and it's tough, you know. It's tough whenever you're used to thinking one way, you know.
Yeah, I was telling Nicole Marcus that Carlos went to visit you, and I didn't know that he went, and he posted that picture of y'all two on Facebook.
Oh, yeah.
And there's a lot of your friends commenting on there, and there were some people that were incarcerated with you when you were at Dominguez Unit. And
yeah.
I was telling Nicole, like, it was very humbling to see all of the good things that people were saying about you, about how humble you were, how you've grown up a lot in there, and that you have a different way of thinking. And one guy was like, that boy likes them peanut butter pancakes. So I wanted to ask you, what is that?
Oh, yeah, they are. That's what they serve us for breakfast at Dominguez every morning, peanut butter and pancakes.
Okay. That's what I was wondering.
Yeah, they used to serve that a lot to us over there. And but, you know, and, for example, Melissa Carlos, he did 2 years at Dominguez State Jail.
Yeah.
He's a convicted felon. Now, the conversation we had yesterday, it was beyond the street mentality that we both used to have. We sat down, he's like, okay, bro. When he walked in, he said, man, you look great, Marcus. He's like, man, I haven't seen him in over 3 years. He's like, man, bro, you look great. You can tell you're in great shape. You look fit. You look healthy. He's like, man. And I was like, man, appreciate you. So we sat down, we started talking. He goes, so what do you want to do when you come home? business line. What kind of business do you want to do? And so we started talking. I started sharing ideas with him. I was telling him about the hot shot. You know, I would like to get my CDL and maybe start a hot shot business. He said, think beyond that, Marcus. Think beyond that.
Nice.
And he just started, him and his girl, they just started their own business about maybe 3 or 4 months ago. They got a cleaning business. They got contracts already with different companies. And he just talked to her dad, and they're about to start up another business. They're going to start cleaning construction sites for different companies. So he was a convicted felon and had the street mentality, but he turned the negative into a positive. Whenever he came down, all he did was read books, put together plans for the future, set goals, and when he got out, he put them in the motion.
Yeah, I love that story too, because something that I've seen and I've heard other people talk about too is how, like, you know, the skills that somebody has when they're, you know, in the street life can translate into managing your own business and having that entrepreneurial mindset and running your own business. If you can kind of get over the fear of that and really get motivated to do it, it's like that's a great way of getting around a lot of the hiring discrimination.
And it's right. You can take all the skills that you use to the street mentality as far as hustling and all that stuff, and you can use it in a positive way. You can. It's like I was telling Melissa, whenever I came to prison, I had two choices. I had the choice to make this the worst experience, the worst thing that ever happened to me, or I could choose to make this the best thing that ever happened to me. And I chose to make it the best thing that ever happened to me. And I never allow my environment or the circumstances that I'm going through to be bigger than my happiness, you know? I just stay focused on being a better person, not going back to the old thinking. And I use this, incarceration can give you a sense of empowerment. Like, oh, I went through this fire and it didn't break me. And now I'm ready to get out. And I could set goals. And I could fail at these goals, but I'm not going to give up on doing the right thing. And I'm going to keep on trying.
And I think a lot of that, too, a lot of the success comes from the success of knowing that you have, you know, that support. And that's one thing is when we talk about, you know, it being hard, there's some times where I don't even know where you are. Like when you were, you know, getting recategorized, had no clue when I was going to be able to talk to you, and it was almost a month before you were able to call.
Yeah, I know that puts stress on the family members and on me as well, you know. But I know it's tough. When I talk to my sister, she's like, "Finally, bro, where are you? I haven't been able to sleep.
Yeah,
where are you?" I told her, that is really tough. Being away from the family is tough. At times, I go on lockdown. One time I went on a 19 or 21 day lockdown. You can't use the phone. You can shower every other day, and my family, Melissa, doesn't hear from me, so they're worrying a lot, you know.
Well, and even through the hurricane, I was telling Nicole about what happened and you waking up in the middle of the night to water coming in your cell, and
yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, the living conditions it's really there's poor living conditions. Even where I'm at right now, when it's cold, it's cold. When it's hot, it's scorching hot. At the trustee camp I'm at right now, it's like you're sleeping outside. All the buildings have no insulation. It's just a little tin building.
And
the
this
window...
is...
No, go ahead.
I was just going to say, and this is like a desirable place, right? Like the trustee camp.
Yes, ma'am. People pray and hope to come to places like this.
Right.
These conditions are really worse than the Dominguez unit that I was at. Dominguez had insulation, and it didn't have no AC, and when it was hot, it's hot, scorching hot there, and when it's cold, it's cold, but here I wake up in the morning, and it's like you're camping outside. I mean, it's horrible, you know, but yeah, I mean, you get a little bit more freedom. I can walk around. We got a track. We got a basketball court. We got a weight room. I could go.
You have 1 minute left.
I could go and come as I please. But just being incarcerated is tough and there's poor conditions.
Yeah. Okay, so we have less than a minute left. Just wondering if there's anything else you want people who are listening to this to know.
I just want people to know that, I mean, the ones who are incarcerated, just want them to know that, you know, this is not the end of the world, and just stay positive, because good things will come from this. You know, share your experience with somebody else, because you can make a difference in somebody else's life.
Hmm. And as always, little
Thank
brother, before it
you.
Hangs up, I love you.
Goodbye.
Love you too.
So that was Marcus Salazar, Melissa's younger brother. And he was at, he's incarcerated in Texas.
Yes, he's now at the Clemens Unit, which is a trustee camp. And so when he was first, what as I was saying earlier, when he first caught his chains, he was at Garza West, which is a prison in Beeville, Texas. Then from there, he was moved to the Dominguez Unit, which is right outside of San Antonio. He spent about 2 years there, and that was like, that was an experience for me. When I went to see him the first time over Christmas last year was, God, it was, had almost been 2.5 years that I had been able to like touch my brother, mm-hmm. because we were able to get contact visits. So, I mean, I hugged him, and I remember I started crying, and he was like, oh my God, are you okay? And I was like, no, it's happy tears, and I can't stop them, and I'm sorry, because, you know, you don't want to be crying in a visitation room full of people. But even that experience was so emotional because of everything else going on. There was these little kids dressed in, you know, their Sunday best because they were going to see Dad on Christmas.
Well, and will you also tell us how much those collect calls just cost?
Oh, God. Well, they're probably about $5 a call. If I put $20 on my brother's phone, I mean, just taxes there alone, $20 is normally $25.75 that I get. And then he gets about 4 phone calls out of that $20. So it does, since now he's in the penitentiary system, it goes by however many minutes we use. So he can have like $2 on his phone, and that'll give us like enough time for him to call and be like, I only have $2 left. Can you put money on my phone? I'll be like, all right, you know, and do that. But the, I mean, the killer is the taxes that they put on you all the time. So I did a rough estimate for the amount so far of what he's been incarcerated now, and then kind of averaged it out to when he gets out. And for 5 years, it was looking like about $8,000 worth of phone calls.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, and that kind of, so $25.75 gets you about 4 calls.
Mm-hmm.
So you're looking at, you know, $8. Is that, am I doing my math right? $7.
Yeah.
$7 per 20-minute call.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that was CenturyLink, by the way.
You have been listening to Nicole Lindahl interview Melissa Salazar and her brother Marcus Salazar, who is serving time in a Texas prison, on KBOO Portland. Listen to this and previous Prison Pipeline programs at kboo.fm/prisonpipeline. Like Prison Pipeline on Facebook. Thanks to our engineers, Danielle and Mike, and thank you for listening.
Do you understand me now? Sometimes you see that I'm mad. Don't you know no one alive can always be a letter when everything goes wrong? You see sometimes. Oh, but I'm just a soul whose intentions are good. Oh, Lord, please don't let me be misunderstood. You know, sometimes I'm so carefree with a joyless heart.
and sometimes I get it serious. All I have is words. Let me balance in your mind on the side.
KABU's building a city of media makers. For 50 years, KABU has had an open-door policy and trained anyone for free who is interested to learn to create radio and media. We believe in mutual aid, a reciprocal exchange of resources and services for benefit of all. What a stale place Portland could become if we lose our diversity of voices and our creative climate that emphasizes fun, truth, beauty, joy, peace, love, and justice. We know that, with our expertise and your support, we can keep this city creative.